Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the My Life, Your Life Together podcast. This is Zach, and I'm joined by Lexi, Zach Big Hello. Daddy Jenkins, and Nathaniel Clementine Ryan.
That is my full name.
And I'm is that really your full name?
Legal name.
Yeah.
Legal is your legal name?
Yeah. Spot on. Yeah, legal name.
He likes to go by Clemmy if you ever see him out in public, though.
If you don't call me Clemmy, I get really upset.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for the heads up. I've been here talking to the guy for like half an hour and didn't know the right name to call him.
No, for the love of God, don't do that.
It's going to take everything in my power not to refer to you as Clemmy throughout the podcast.
Whenever we just go to dinner now, it's just going to... That's just.
Gabby's going to be like,
what's going on?
What is happening? No, his name's Nate. It's boring. I tried to make it more
extremely
fun.
Extremely boring.
What is your middle name?
Michael.
Nathan Michael?
Yep.
It's a strong name.
Strong. Strong.
No, if only they could see you now, they would have changed it
strong,
back then.
Like Irish, like English...
They get along.
Irish.
I hear they get along really well.
Apparently.
Yeah.
the best of friends.
Yeah. Especially like religiously.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, for
makes
sure.
Sense. That's great. So Nate reached out after listening to our anxiety podcast. And like a lot of people have, they thought it was a really good episode, helpful episode, which is encouraging to us for making it. I mean, there's many different types of mental health and different struggles that people go through, and kind of hand in hand with anxiety is usually like depression or a form of depression or something. So today, us four,
yeah,
is that grammar
correct? That sounds correct.
Yeah. Is it really
grammatically correct?
I love grammar.
The four of us.
Are you sure it's not we four?
I think it's we four.
It's actually supposed to be we four.
Which doesn't sound right.
It
yeah.
Because right
if you
at
take
all.
The four out, it's we are talking, not us are talking.
We could say us are talking.
I hate
we don't have to be grammatically correct.
We can do whatever we want.
So today we're going to talk about different experiences we've had with depression, whether it's ourselves or people we know. Or people that we want to be depressed. No, we're not gonna do that.
What's wrong with you?
I don't know.
That was a lot of that was great.
I don't know. So Nate.
Zach.
Yes.
Oh, this is gonna be rough. I forget that we got two Zachs here.
Depression. Isn't that just a fancy word for being bummed out?
Dwight, you ignorant slut. Having watched The Office now probably five times through, I can understand nice. Most references.
Yes.
That's my
it's great.
My wife and I jam. And everybody loves Raymond. That's also our jam. Nice. Which is
I never watched it through.
Oh man, it's so good. It's hilarious. We started doing it when my parents always watched it. And my dad laughing out loud doesn't happen that often. Like it needs to be really funny. So watching my mom and him laugh out loud to that show as a kid, and then we have it on in the hospital, and now we laugh out loud like nice. A bunch of idiots because it is—it's hilarious. We watched.
You turned
it
into your parents
three times.
That's every almost. Kid's dream.
Almost.
Isn't there a commercial
yeah.
series about that?
Yeah,
that
with don't the, turn the, into the your parents.
Stuff. The, yeah, with my employer actually. That's my employer's commercial.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
In the insurance world.
Who? State Farm?
Huh?
Geico.
Getting there.
Little Liberty Mutual.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah,
getting
colder. Farmers.
Colder. You're like it's the main one that you're missing, right?
I don't
now.
Think I've ever heard of it before.
Yeah. Well then you're not missing much. It's fine.
We can't leave that in. What if somebody listens to this? You're gonna get terminated.
God, don't threaten me with a good time.
So Nathan. Nathaniel.
Zachary.
Jimothy.
I don't know if I've gotten that one yet,
okay.
But we'll go with it.
I don't know. What made you reach out and be like, I want to talk about an experience through depression that I had?
So I think what made me reach out is I've gotten the chance to actually listen to every episode you guys have put out so far.
Thank you.
I've really enjoyed it.
Our one true fan.
Yeah, one true fan. It was funny. It was actually funny when one of your episodes, when you guys were bashing insurance, which was really funny.
Yeah.
Which was really funny. You would mention like actually someone that listens to us works in insurance. So that was hilarious. But yeah, after listening to...
I didn't even cross my mind either.
After listening to the last podcast with you guys and with Sarah, I've gotten the chance to grow up with the Snyder family, the Adams family, and yeah, look at the snaps. And it was something that I genuinely did not know that Sarah went through. I knew Sarah had gone through some stuff, but I didn't know the extent of where it was. And even with you guys, kind of the same thing, having known you guys forever now, and just didn't realize that, oh wow, this is a little bit bigger than I thought. I've always known anxiety existed. I just didn't, I guess, realize to the full extent how it affects different people,
yeah,
different ways.
And I'm going to throw in here that you, Nate and Lex, have known each other since they were actual babies, right?
Yep.
Like,
yeah, our parents were friends before we were even born.
Yeah,
right.
So when he says they grew up together, like, they literally grew up together.
Yeah. Yeah, so. 9 months difference between me and Brianna, Lex's older sister. Oh. And 9 months difference with us.
Yep.
So just the other way around.
Yeah, that's cool.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it's the only way I remember.
My sister and I are exactly 18 months
apart. A lot of banging going on back then. A lot of banging.
Well, I guess so. I guess so. It was the 90s. It was the 90s. But yeah, I think that, but having, so for me, anxiety, I'm sure I've had some of it. I remember one point in life where I definitely had some of it. But what's been bigger in my life and what I've learned has actually been kind of hereditary is depression in my family. Anyway, I didn't realize how, I guess, not, I don't want to say how bad it was, but how different members of my family had it until much later in life. So I figured that'd just kind of be a similar but different topic to talk about, because for me, for what you guys were talking about, I had some similarities, but in the form of depression compared to anxiety. So I was like, hey, that might be a decent topic to talk about, and kind of go from there.
So when you talk about like hereditary in your family, did you, and you said it took you a while to kind of recognize growing up, was it like certain members or like one individual in your family, or kind of like everybody experienced it?
So it was really one member in my family. I didn't realize my dad actually had struggles with depression when I was younger. It was different for me in the sense that I went through it in a different way that he did. Mm-hmm. But if you told me that at a certain point in my life where I can remember everything, that my dad was going through something, I don't remember that. So once my parents kind of informed me of that, that was like, okay, that's not just me, which was helpful at the time. So I guess that's really where I'm like, okay. And then you look into it a little bit. Okay, this can be hereditary. So for me, that, I think that definitely played a big part in when I was going through it. Mm-hmm. And still do to some extent every now and then. It's definitely not ever going to be perfect, but taking the right steps has helped a lot.
Yeah. I mean, that's like huge. I mean, I think that's the truth for anything, is like life's not perfect. Like,
not even close.
Things are going to go wrong. Things are going to flare up. Whether, you know, I think you can heal, grow, and move past things in your from your past. But like I said on the anxiety podcast, like from the beginning of the year, like my baseline anxiety reduced exponentially, and it happened at like one of the prayer, I'll call it a prayer meeting at church. And you know, like, that's great. My baseline anxiety went down. And then there's things that happen that make my baseline anxiety worse. It's just, there's still a chemical imbalance in my head that's affected by sleep deprivation, that's affected by just egregious stress, which is the normal stress that people go through. Everybody's body goes through anxiety. It's there to keep you alive. Just
right.
Mine was out of control. I would, you know, become anxious because I had a, you know, black pen or blue pen instead of a black pen, something stupid like that.
Crippling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the last times I was super anxious was we were up for like 20 something hours when we had flown out to California. And then instead of like lying in my hotel room resting, which is what my brain was telling me to do, we like went out and explored a little bit and had an absolutely great time. And I was like, oh, wow, I'm not anxious at all. This is fine. And then we were driving back in the car and it was quiet. And then my mind just started ticking and ticking and ticking and just ticking.
All flooded.
Yeah. And I was like, I'm going to die here. And then like I used to have like an internal battle of like, don't take your Xanax. You can get over this. And I was like, nope, definitely not worth it right now. And I have like a baby dose of Xanax. I don't even know if it does anything. It's like, it's 0.25 milligrams and I'm 270 pounds. Like there's no way it actually does anything, but my mind thinks it does something. Hey, so
placebo effect is real.
Yeah, right. It's right. A real thing. So yeah, I think just because something's in your past and like you're doing a good job working past it and you're like, okay, it's gone. Like, it's still going to flare up from time to time. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
No, not even a little bit.
So there are like certain things that I don't want to say trigger, but more or less like you realize you get depressed during certain seasons of your life or during.
Oh, for sure.
Okay.
For sure. So the whole seasonal depression thing for me is very real.
Yeah.
That is during like, I'm a big summer guy for half that reason. During the fall is really when it can start to, when it just gets darker sooner, it's just gloomier. This summer's been terrible and lovely.
I was just
New York
thinking about that. Yeah. It was like, it's been real rainy, overcast. Mm-hmm.
And thankfully it's, I've been all right, but typically every fall I get a little bit of it and then it kind of wears off. But when I really struggled with it was in my early 20s, late teens, early 20s, probably even sooner than that. Probably middle school is when it really started for me to kind of be a thing in my life and really kind of figure it out from there. But definitely did not handle it well up until probably a few years ago.
Do you know the – not pinpoint, but like – the point where you started noticing that you were feeling
like the catalyst.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's a great word. Yeah.
Fantastic word.
My guests aren't supposed to use bigger words than me.
So I think for me, it was probably when we really probably started before I moved back. When my family moved around a ton as a kid. My dad was a pastor. Born in upstate New York, lived in.
I didn't know that?
Yeah, my dad was a pastor. My dad, wow. Biblically, is probably the smartest person I know.
Wow.
And I've told everybody, if I'm a quarter of the man my dad is, I will have done something right. I adore my dad.
Keep working.
Yeah, I got a long way to go. But thanks, Zach, for that encouragement.
You're welcome. You're welcome, Clemmy.
But I think it was probably... as a kid, having a harder time fitting in. We moved down to North Carolina when I was probably – I think I was just about to turn 8, if I remember correctly. And I had friends in the church, but that's really it. We moved in – and we had a small apartment we were in a small apartment complex in Rocky Mount, which is a small town probably an hour outside of Raleigh. And that's actually where Lexi – fell off my parents' bed and broke her arm.
Got her wonky elbow.
Yeah.
Wait. Wonky elbow?
Yeah. So
she says, do you want to see it?
See that lump?
Yeah.
That's my bone.
You can notice it more when you straighten it out.
Really?
Yeah. See how that like protrudes up there?
Yeah. That occurred in a small town.
They said it didn't break.
Well, it definitely did something. It definitely did something. Well, it was a Rocky Mount doctor, so it probably did.
Here's my question. Did they x-ray it?
Yeah, I think. Now I can't remember. I'm pretty sure.
You're like, they said it didn't break. They didn't take x-rays or anything, but no, it's not broken.
No, I'm pretty sure they did.
Yeah, you guys came down to visit us, and that's when that happened. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was an event.
I still remember that house.
Yeah, that
pool.
Oh, yeah, that little part. It was a decent apartment complex for what it was, but had friends in the apartment complex. Then that was fine. But when we moved, my parents bought a fixer-upper and moved into a small little – neighborhood in the same town, and I had a hard time fitting in with the kids in that area. I was younger and the kids there had already had their friend group for a certain amount of time, and kids are jerks. So struggled with that. But what really did it was probably moving back up to New York and starting middle school brand new.
How old were you when you guys moved back to New York?
I was starting fifth grade. So 12, maybe, I think.
What?
Yeah.
12. You were 12 in fifth grade?
11, 12, maybe.
What are you, dumb?
Very.
Aren't you like 12 when you go to seventh grade?
No, yeah. Maybe. I don't know.
Rough. Yeah, Ava's starting sixth grade.
Five, six.
She's 11.
I was definitely fifth grade, but so whatever age you were in fifth grade.
So like 10.
Yeah, sure.
What are you, dumb or something?
11.
Wait, you guys only lived in North Carolina for 2 years?
No, we were there for at least three. Okay. So who knows? I have my timeline screwed up, but whatever.
I know, but I want to pick on it.
That's fine.
While we're talking about depression, I want to pick on you. Oh my God.
Wow. One of the things, though, that I think is interesting, because you talked about you guys moved, you had a friend group, you guys moved to the Carolinas, and then you established another friend group, then you moved again and kind of had trouble finding a friend group, and then you guys moved again, all in the span of like 3 years. That's a lot of transition. And
it was a lot of moving. It was a lot of
instability.
There was three of us. It was me, my two little brothers. I'm now one of five boys, but my two youngest brothers were born then when we moved back up here. So yeah, in Jersey, you're young enough where you didn't really have any friends besides church and whatever at that point, or like pre-K. And then in Rocky Mount, your first apartment complex, had a couple of friends in that area who I got to hang out with, which was good. And then once we got that house, fitting in with the neighborhood kids there was harder.
Yeah.
They were just jerks. And then moving back up here, starting one middle school in fifth grade, then going to a different middle school in sixth grade.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was a lot. And my parents knew that it was a lot. But when we moved into our house in Rotterdam, where my family still is and where I've been since sixth grade, the only person that I knew, knew was my second cousin, Jess, who had her own friend group at the time. Right. And I had a neighbor across the street whose name was also Jess, because that's just the name of the 90s. There were like five, six Jesses in my grade alone. But I had her. Yeah. So all I had in middle school were friends that were girls from my first year anyway, from sixth grade. In seventh grade, I met my best friend, Cody, who I'm still very
close. I know that name.
Still best man at my wedding. I adore that idiot.
And if you don't describe your best friend as "I adore that idiot," they're not really your best friend.
100% agree.
So,
so middle school. So from that was a lie. But so getting messed with in middle school, and just because I was new, kids are jerks in middle school.
Right.
I was
the new kid always.
So that was hard. But eventually, everybody grows up, right? Most people grow up when it comes to the middle school. I guess in regards to like just switching from like middle school to high school, people just kind of level out, right? You really, I didn't have that problem, but the jerks that were jerks to me realized like, okay, whatever. And plus, once you start working at Taco Bell when you're 16 and all of your classmates are smoking their brains out and want a free Baja Blast from you, they kind of start off a little bit.
Treating you nice.
Yeah.
Hope you get a couple extra crunchy tacos.
Coming in stoned out of your mind to pay for with your quarters, your meal, and asking for a drink. What, Nate, can I just have a drink for water? Go get a Baja Blast and just shut up. Just leave me alone. And my manager didn't care at the time, because I had a ton of people that knew me that came in that still purchased stuff. So that was a rough time. But I think the roughest for me was after just a really bad breakup right in my early 20s. That put me on a different low than I think I've ever been or ever wish on anybody.
So you said you think that it kind of started, or the catalyst was kind of junior high and teenage years. Kind of what was that experience for you? And especially because you said you and your dad experienced depression differently. How would you say or describe like your experience with depression was, at least starting out, like in your younger years?
Yeah. So for my father, I can't even remember it. So my parents have told me about it, and to this day, I don't remember my dad being anything but my dad, not like personality wise, right? I definitely saw my dad struggle a little bit down in North Carolina just because of what my family was going through down there at the time. But I don't remember him being significantly different where I would have noticed it at a young age, right? So for me, I kept a lot of that to myself. My parents knew that I definitely had some issues, but I never shared with my parents really the full extent of what was happening. And they knew that. And my parents know that now. They knew I was trying my best and they kind of let me try to figure that out on my own at the time. But it was just it's hormones too, right? It's your 12, 13 years old.
One thing I wanted to add in was that, like, by no means are any of us licensed mental health counselors or know a lick of anything professionally.
No.
But, like, I don't feel like myself I've ever experienced, like, at least a deep-seated depression in anything. I don't know that I ever hit that point in my life personally. But, like, it's interesting to me that, like, anxiety is definitely more of, like, an acute kind of response. Like, it can be chronic anxiety at my baseline and everything, but the anxiety attacks or panic attacks, quote-unquote, they're targeted at one thing and it's acute onset. Whereas when you were talking about the catalyst of depression for in your life, everything just kind of built on itself from moving away to moving back to friends through junior high or middle school, rather, into high school. Like everything, it was more of a compounding feature. And every step of the way, like you just took on more and more and more until it kind of just overwhelmed you. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yeah, I guess that's a good way to put it.
I'm smart.
You are. To a certain degree.
That's true.
But yeah, so yeah, it was a bunch of steps. I think it hit me hardest in my 20s. For sure. That was probably one of my lowest points in my life. And also it was, I'm sure it has affected. I lost people young too. My aunt passed away when I was 16, who I adored. It was my dad's biological sister. That was rough. My great grandfather, who I was close to, who my son is now named after, passed away, I think, right before or right after my aunt passed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Those were rough times. But I don't know if depression is the right word for it. I'm sure it played a part in everything that I've gone through just because I adored both those people. But my early 20s was really when I was at my worst, just after a really crappy breakup, where you think your world is ending, right? So that for me was where I was really feeling just 100% not myself, didn't really want anything to do with anybody, kind of just secluded myself a little bit. And depression hits me differently, where it doesn't affect my sleep. If anything, I want to sleep more. And it doesn't really affect my appetite. It just affects my entire day. It throws everything off. And I'm sure some anxiety comes with that, right? So just you're nonstop thinking about the situation, what you could have done to change the situation. And that breakup was atrocious in many different ways. But it wasn't just the other individual's fault, right? It was as you get older, at the time you're just resentful, right?
It's all them. I didn't do anything.
You're just angry, right? And while I would say a lot of it wasn't in my control, a lot of it was. I'm sure to this day it was a 50-50 thing, and God has blessed me 10 times over now where it was clearly what was meant to be, right? But at the time, you think your world is ending, and you're questioning your every move and really caring about – I'm someone that when I really care about a person, I put my all. So to have 2 or 3 years kind of just flushed down the drain for shitty choices – on both parties, and just to be blunt,
yeah,
it was, yeah. it hit me really hard. I think the hardest that it hit me was, I remember, I think it was just me and my dog in my apartment, and it was Thanksgiving morning. Had Thanksgiving at my grandparents' house, like we always did. And I just remember breaking down, crying, just not understanding what was happening to me. It came out of nowhere. And to this day, I'm not a big crier, my wife will tell you. But if my wife is upset and something's really gotten to her and she's crying, my oldest dog freaks out. She hates, and I think that's what did it. She just hates seeing someone cry. She gets all nervous and wants to make sure you're okay. So
Alpina needs some doggy therapy.
Oh, man, yeah. Well, let me tell you, that God gave me that dog very on purpose. Mm-hmm. That dog has seen me at my lowest points, and now she's gotten to see me at my best points. So it's been,
yay.
It has. She's a pain in my ass, but she is.
All dogs are.
They are. But
again, if you have a dog and they're not a pain in your ass, they're not a real dog.
Right. But she got to, she's gotten to see everything. So it's, that took a long time for me to kind of get past. That was rough, for lack of better terms.
So I was just going to ask about, like, again, towards your experiences. I know different people experience depression in different ways. You're saying, like, you were having kind of the just, like, kind of sleep the day away. Was it, like, the lack of motivation? Was it more the, like, depressed self-deprecating thoughts or ideations? Like,
so I was never the type of person that ever thought about harming myself. Thank God for that. That just was never crossed my mind. Thank God. But for me, it was sleeping, not wanting to get up in the morning, just wanting to stay in bed, not wanting to go to work, not wanting to put my all into my job, which if you know me, I work hard. So that was a big deal for me. It definitely took a toll on my work ethic, just because I didn't want to do anything. I didn't have the patience for anything. I worked in customer service at the time in a call center. Oof. And I just did not
turn it off and turn it back on.
So I worked for a state program that handled a bunch of different state topics. So it wasn't just one thing that you were answering the phone on. It was a majority of different things. And we would get up to 80 calls a day, just one rep. And I stopped caring. I just completely stopped caring. And I had worked really hard in that position and wasn't really, they weren't looking at me for promotion anyway. So I wasn't caring. I was still working two or three jobs at the time, just to keep my mind busy. But I cared a lot more about my night jobs, just because they weren't stressful. And I've told everybody the same thing. If you ever want to get a second job or a third job, make sure you like it. If you don't like it, there's no point. That needs to be a de-stressor from your day job. So I would do that, and then I would go and work at I was working at a little store in Crossgates Mall called Giftology at the time when I was going through all of that, which was all right, I guess. But then different stores throughout Crossgates that I worked in.
Is that where you developed your Oakley addiction?
I've had my Oakley addiction since I was in high school.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. When I could first start, when I actually had a little bit of cash and I was like, oh, I can spend $80 on a pair of sunglasses.
Currently sitting here with an Oakley hat on with an American flag for the O.
Yes. I didn't bring any sunglasses because it's cloudy, and I will regret that on the way home because it's getting sunny out. But yes. So there was that. I was also like, whiskey was my thing. Yeah. To this day, I can't touch Jack Daniels. I won't touch it. Drinking more than I should. Definitely not. I've never liked being drunk ever. I can't stand it. I don't like being in control of myself. And if there's one thing that's probably one of my biggest pet peeves, is people that cannot contain their alcohol act like morons. And that's their excuse the next day for acting. I can't deal with that.
What about people like myself who act like morons when they don't have alcohol?
I have a little bit more patience.
A little bit more patience.
But so there was that. And also, I, at that point in my life, had kind of fallen off the wagon in regards to my faith. I did what I wanted. I made my own choices in regards to what I did in my early 20s. And where I was very, my whole life being faith-based, right? My parents are both Christians. Like I said, my dad is probably biblically one of, if not the smartest man I know in regards to knowing the Bible in the correct context. So, and like on your last podcast, the way that we grew up, there was a little bit of a stigma on anxiety and depression. And when we were older, it was different because we were going to different churches, but growing up that stuff still affects you. So
yep.
It was that was really to kind of wrap that up. That was the way that I handled it. It was just all the wrong ways. The only things that I was praying as much as I could at that time, because I knew that I needed something again, and having good friends. My parents didn't know the extent of it. They knew that my mom knew that something was going on, so she'd check on me, but they never knew the full extent of everything.
So did you know everything that was going on with him, or were you guys, I feel like you've gone through like not peaks and troughs of friendship, but like my best friend, Michael, like we'll go months without talking sometimes, and then we'll touch base again. Mm-hmm. It's just life's busy right now.
Yeah.
So is that more the relationship you guys had? I mean, granted, that was your 20s. You probably were like, just getting your cell 20s. Phone or something like that, you know,
in
your early 20s when we got married, Lex got her first cell phone.
it was also, and again, this isn't an ex-bashing session, but my ex didn't really appreciate me being friends with other females either. Mm. So that definitely took a toll for sure. And again, that was my choice. So,
which is also got to be hard, because as you were saying, when you first moved back, it seemed like the largest portion of your friend group was actually female. So I'm sure
for
that
sure.
didn't.
Yeah, and there were mesh well. And there were different events in her life that kind of reinforced that in her head. And again, there's nothing I hold against her at this point in my life. God has blessed me a million times over. He put me through that situation for a reason, and I'm thankful that he did, because it taught me everything that I needed to move forward and how I wanted my life to go after that. So, and it's been 10 years at least at this point. But that Lexi and Brianna and I probably didn't talk as much, because I don't think I did to really many of my female friends at that time. But if
I feel like I remember you talking about that too, like. It obviously wasn't something you harped on, but like,
what?
Not talking to Nate as much because of certain circumstances that he was going through. I wasn't friends with Nate at the time. I didn't like him when we first met. He didn't like me either.
I knew that was going to be brought up at some point in this podcast.
Yeah, you guys did not really like each other.
No, and like
we had like this. It was like a playful banter if we were friends, but we weren't. So then it really wasn't playful banter. It was just like trying to pick on the insecurities of one another.
We're like, joking around. But I didn't think we ever got that bad.
Trying to pick on each other without overtly just insulting each other.
No, I think the only thing that I can think of that might have even done that for me was I know that you guys had a rough patch when you were younger.
Yeah.
So like that made me be like, oh, Zach can kick rocks. He can go touch grass for a little bit. And I think that's probably it.
Mine was that you sometimes wore your sunglasses backwards on the back of your head, and so I hated people that did that.
I don't blame you at all for that.
Nate had a good reason to not like me. Mine was he just wore sunglasses backwards, and that really bothers me when I see people do that. Yeah,
not anymore. That lasted probably a grand total of 6 months, maybe. But
something that I wanted to just say, and this is going back like, I don't know, 10 minutes, which just feels like an eternity with this. Just with like breakups in general, I mean, when you're in a relationship with somebody and like you love somebody, they start to consume part of your heart, feelings, and emotions. So if you break up with somebody, every, you know, part of the heart, emotion, or whatever, it's gone. And people always say, oh, I feel like there's a void that needs to be filled. But there really is. Like if you care about somebody, you're giving part of yourself to caring about them and loving them. And then when they're gone, there's nothing there. And so, like you said, you maybe filled that void in ways that you shouldn't have.
Definitely.
And that's, I don't want to say that's part of life, but I don't think anybody ever, their first instinct is to fill it with something happy-go-lucky when they go through a breakup.
No.
You know what I mean? It's always, going to be, you're going to miss us. You're going to miss that because part of you is still missing.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. And like I was saying, thankfully I had a really good friend group at the time. My best friend, Cody, God bless him. I adore him. I truly do. But you can vent to him and he's just like, oh, wow. That, and like, that's him. he is just like, he'll tell, like, I'm sorry, Nate, or whatever. But like, that's just not how he's built. Right. So one of my friends, I can shout out to Chris O'Brien, who was there for me at every single point during that really hard time in my life. Encouraged me to get out of the house and did stuff together. We both car guys. So thankfully I still had my fun car as an outlet at the time. And, that helped a lot. That probably and I've told everybody the same thing. For me, I'm convinced, as ironic as it is, God gave me cars as an outlet, because I think I'd be dead otherwise for the amount of stupid shit I've done in cars. And I've done plenty of it. I think that I've met some great people through the car community up here. And it was a chance, like, I can just go for a drive. It's manual transmission. You just feel the car and you just kind of just relax. And that helped a lot. But
kind of like your escape, your like decompression.
That was my therapy at the time.
Yeah.
That whole thing happened, I think, in the fall. So it was starting to get colder and it was starting to snow at the time. So it was harder for me to get the car out because it was rear wheel drive and did not have snow tires on it. And you don't really want to be taking it through mountain passes or up to anywhere that has windy turns.
Right.
But that was big. I had different friend groups that were very supportive and helped me slowly get through it. And really at the end of the day, it wasn't any of that. It was God. It was Christ that was just kind of helping me get through it and led me to my wife at the end of the day. So it all happened for very, very good reason. And there's no ill will now at this point in my life towards that individual. It's,
yeah,
you know, things happen. And, like I said, no one, there's not just one person at fault for that. Right. I made my own choices. Plenty of them were not good. So yeah, I think it's still something that I still struggle with today. Is that just didn't end it. Right. It's still a part of me at this point.
So you had said, right, like when you went through that breakup and started really experiencing like the worst of the depression and stuff, and your faith kind of took a hit too. Do you think that contributed to the depression, or the depression is what kind of pulled you away from your faith? And I guess a follow up on that too, you said God helped you get through a lot of that. How did you kind of make your way back?
Long story short, I guess I can't even do a long story short. Realistically, Lex and I both went to a youth group called Common Ground in our church. Met plenty of good people there. There's, I think I still only keep in touch with maybe one of them, if that.
Is that including Lex?
No, Lex and I have always, okay. Yeah, no. That
they were friends before.
Yeah. I was just kidding.
So after that had ended, and at 18, like, I just kind of convinced myself that I'm going to do what I want, right? There was no rhyme or reason. I'm just like, I want to live the way I want to live. And you justify everything, right?
Right.
Like, oh, this, that, and the third. God says this, but maybe he means that. You try to justify it in your own head. It's just not justifiable at the end of the day. If I could change, and like everybody in life, if I could change everything around, I would, and have the same result that I have now, I would. Where I'm still married to my wife, have my two sons and the life that I love, but that's not how life works. So at 18, I did things that I just shouldn't have. Long story short, I went and I did what I want. Dated this girl for around 2 or 3 years and did what I want, got my own apartment. Like, it was just me. I was focused on me. So really getting back to my faith, I've really started to get back into it probably within the past couple of years, to be honest.
You should always be honest.
Well, yeah. Yeah. So Yeah, within the past couple of years, being that, so even after that, I still just kind of did my own thing, right? But I think becoming a dad is really kind of what woke me up a little bit. Like, I need to be better for my boys. And
do you think that has to do with like your dad and his faith growing up? Like, because you earlier you said even if you were a quarter of the man your dad was, you'd be happy.
Definitely, it's. That's true. But it was really not even as much as my father really sticking out of the back of my head as I felt that you need more. You need more. You're going to church. You're kind of going through the motions, right?
Yeah.
But you need more. So I got involved in my church's men group. And I forgot to mention what kind of restarted it, kind of kickstarted it for me was watching The Chosen. Which if you haven't watched it, you should. I am very skeptical of anything like biblical that's put on TV, kind of reenactments of Christ's life. Like I'm like, all I can think of is Mel Gibson. I don't know.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing really wrong with it. It just wasn't my thing. I
gotta be honest. If somebody were to tell me we were going to talk about The Chosen and who had watched it versus three people who hadn't watched it, I did not see the conversation going this way.
I would encourage anyone to watch it, even if you're not a Christian. I think it's a really good, it's realistic. That's the best way that I can put it. It puts the guy that plays Jesus is excellent, but it's a realistic look on him and his disciples. They fought. They were funny with each other. They had different ways of thinking, different ways of wanting to protect Jesus at that time.
Kind of makes it a little bit more like relatable.
Right. That's the best. Yeah. It's a relatable show. Like everybody was screw ups, right? Like they were all screw ups besides Jesus. So that really was like, wow, that helped me a lot. And getting back involved in my church's men group has helped a lot. And then just really just kind of digging deep back in, I realized that I was missing it and that I need to, it's not just for me. I need to be the example that I need to be for my wife, my sons, and my four younger brothers that saw their oldest brother not make the best decisions growing up. Right. So I'm very thankful for it. I'm very thankful that I'm back, not entirely back to where I was, I guess, but I'm getting there. It's one day at a time.
That's awesome.
One day at a time. But
now I feel like I have to watch The Chosen.
You have to.
I spent years being like, I read the book. I know how it ends.
Yeah. But, you have to. It's a really good perspective on Christ.
I don't know. That's just like sticking with me that like, that's part of the reason that got you back into being involved in faith in your church was because of The Chosen. Ah, man, I got to watch it. Now I need to make time to watch TV again.
It's worth the watch. And my wife and I grew up in two different kinds of churches. I went to Baptist, Protestant, whatever you want to call it, right? And then she's always been Catholic. So She's been watching it with me. We've had to take a break just because, you know, the youngest 1 month old isn't really not a big TV guy. You can't really focus for an hour when they're constantly waking up. But,
1 month old.
Yeah.
Get it together.
Well, I know. I've been asking when he's going to start paying rent. But I've enjoyed it a lot. So I would encourage anyone just to just check out the first couple episodes. They're really good.
So your faith, then how did your wife come into the picture and how did that help you with?
So my wife and I have known each other since the ninth grade. Actually, we all went to the same school. We actually used to go on double dates with each other with our different spouses at the time, ironically. Spouses.
Partners.
Well, yeah. So she had a boyfriend in high school and up to early college. And I was dating my girlfriend at the time from when I was out of high school until I was around 21, give or take. So we'd always known each other. We had always been friends. Mm-hmm. We had the same friend group. And we both had our breakups right around the same time, give or take. So we kind of just leaned on each other for support, and it took off from there. So it's been great. I adore my wife. I truly do.
I do too.
She's pretty cool.
Most people do.
I haven't met your wife.
You'd like her.
She's great.
No, I do. I don't deserve anything in my life at this point. And that's how I look at it. My life is blessed beyond well what I deserve. So
you said you both kind of went through breakups at the same time and leaned on each other. Did she experience or go through a lot of the depression?
Definitely.
Same as you?
Yeah. She handled it differently. My wife handled it probably better than I did. My wife's never been a big drinker. Or anything like that. But I think we did. I think we both just experienced it was just an emptiness, right? You feel alone, even though you're talking with people and you're hanging out with people, you're trying to get your mind off of it, you're doing different things. We both just couldn't get out of our own way. So eventually we just started kind of hanging out, venting to each other about our situations, and realized we really cared for each other. So started dating, and a couple years later, married. So
they went from dating to mating.
These are facts.
I mean, isn't that kind of
the general natural progression of life?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so.
But I handled it in just a very crappy way in multiple ways, but kind of like on your guys' last podcast, we grew up with a stigma, right? We grew up in, hey, listen, you just gotta pray it away, right? Just for lack of better, just to be blunt, just keep putting your faith in Christ and everything's just going to disappear. That's not how it works for that point when there's something going on in your head. So I didn't really seek help until I was older, right? Yeah. Were you guys on the last episode, the past couple episodes, kind of expressed like, hey, therapy's important. My wife and I both kind of started ours around the same time. Right after my oldest son was born, Gabby had really bad postpartum depression. She sought out help and it worked really well for her. I was like, you know what? I probably should too. Because to this day, I still have nightmares about my previous relationship. My wife's aware of that. They don't happen often, thank God, but they do. They happen. It's just when you go through something that traumatic, something's bound to happen. Mm-hmm. So I was like, you know what? This is making me kind of nervous. I'm like, I should probably talk to somebody about this. And I went and found a therapist, and I haven't gone to him in probably over a year because I was like, he's not really meeting my needs. And that's something that I got to stress to everybody that wants to seek help. If you find a therapist you're not connecting with after a few sessions, I always tell everybody, give them one to two, really kind of figure out if that works for you. But if you're not vibing, there's nothing wrong with finding somebody else. Yeah, it's like sure. Same with doctors, same with anything in life, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Anything you do, if it's not working, you go to something different. Same with therapy.
Because kind of like you said earlier, at that point, then you're just going through the motions with no matter what it is. And if you're just going through motions, you're going to stay the same. Mm-hmm. There's going to be no change.
Right. So for me, it was like, okay, he's kind of just telling me what I want to hear on certain things, which is like, I don't love that. But there was one thing that he said to me when I was kind of explaining my whole situation. He's like, Nate, that sounds a little bit like PTSD, which I'm like, there's no way. Like, there's no way. I'm like, because you do, when you think PTSD, you think war vets. That's right. The first thing you think of, right? So for me, I'm like, I didn't see anything like that. Like, I didn't see war, right? But then you think about it, you're like, okay, maybe a little bit. Maybe a little bit. Because I did. I saw and went through some stuff that really took a toll on my head. So the more I thought about it, I'm like, okay, maybe a little bit. I refuse to say full blown because I don't think that it is, but that stood out to me a lot.
Well, I think that's also a common misconception is that people, when they hear PTSD, think it has to be war, death, you know, destruction. Like, it, post-traumatic stress can come from any form of trauma, right, you know. So I think that is just interesting because people don't tend to understand or realize that it can come through many different ways and affect you in many different ways.
Right. Right. And it definitely, for me, it wasn't anything I would have ever thought in a million years that I would have had. So therapy, it's, if you are going through something, I encourage it. It's been big for my life. It's been big for my wife's life. We've done it together. So I would encourage anyone to check it out. It was hard at first. Cause like I've said, the way we were raised, it wasn't really, what's the best way that I can put this? It wasn't encouraged. Nope. It was not encouraged. It was,
and arguably wasn't even accepted, even if somebody decided to do it on their own.
Yeah. But I don't think anybody would flat out have the courage to come out and say that they did it. No. I'm sure that we went to church with plenty of people that got therapy or had mental issues that we will never know about to this day.
I still remember there's like a specific person who had depression. And at that age, I had no idea what depression was. But I remember them having like a meeting about it afterwards, like a members only meeting that all the kids had to leave for. So I didn't actually know what was going on, but it was like I don't want to say they were like bashing this person, but it was not a like, let's surround this person with love and like do what we can. It was like,
I think that was also maybe part of a reason that, digging deep into it, I was resentful for a long time over the style church that we went to as kids. Mm-hmm. For multiple reasons, whether it be stuff with my dad that happened, the teachings of how we were raised. I can't think of anyone that we went to church with now that still attends that style church. Yeah, no. If they even still go, right? And even with us in Common Ground, where a lot more was accepted there, like drastically compared to how we were raised. I don't know of anyone that I went to Common Ground with, besides the exception of you and Brianna, that still actually even attends church. Yeah. I can't think of one individual.
So was the experience, because from what it sounds like, it sounds kind of like one of those churches where it's like everyone has to be happy, and if you're not happy, something like you're not a good Christian. Yeah. Or
yep.
Because that, to me, is just spiritual abuse, and the Bible doesn't support it.
There's the biggest red flag for me as a kid, because you only see so much. Like, you've been raised one way.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
You've been raised one way. The biggest thing for me that I noticed as a kid was anybody that decided to attend a different church, whether it be the same style church that we – you don't talk to them anymore. Adios.
Yep.
Kick rocks. That's how it went.
But we fell in love.
You never went to my church, weirdo.
I know, but I didn't go to your church. That was the point.
It's like Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
Well, I was not going there anymore when we started dating.
You weren't?
No.
Oh, cool. I still like...
She'd gotten out of the gang.
Like, I never went, like, attended the church you guys did. I know my brother did for a good amount of time, pulling double duty. Church services for all the wrong reasons.
Was it for a girl?
Yeah.
Oh, it's always for a girl.
I was like, that's the wrong reason.
But I have like just an idea of stories I've heard from people. But I remember when Lex and I started going to our current church, Redeeming Love. That's where Zach, Big Daddy Jenkins, also attends.
I also attend.
And Lex, correct me if I'm wrong, it took you probably at least 3 years to settle into the style of church that Redeeming Love
100%
is.
100%.
Like from how the worship is.
Oh, definitely.
To many other things that are
like
way too deep
your
to get into
church
on this.
Is probably kind of close to.
Yeah, definitely. Now, absolutely. Yeah. From what I've seen from your guys' services and from where my where I go and my parents go now, very similar. Mm-hmm. What Zach was just saying, going from where we went to
where you're like standing still with a hymnal in your hand,
right? Stand like, and it's and
it's very like liturgical.
394,
right? And you only heard one guy singing who was the loudest in the entire church because there were maybe like 100 members, if that. But going from that to where it was, there were hymnals. It was an hour and a half long, sermon. It was a two hour
like ordeal. Imagine being like a little kid sitting there trying to understand what they're talking about, and it's just all like,
no, I don't think I will.
Theology. I don't think I got.
And thankfully, I had
very much out of it.
I had a better grasp on it just because of my dad.
Yeah.
And my dad being a pastor before we came back up here, and going back to the church that they went to before.
Wait, had a pastor at the church?
No.
He did preach a couple times,
but he wasn't like a staff pastor.
No. He did. They did ask him.
He did
to
have
preach.
Multiple pastors at that church, right?
Yes, okay. I want to say two or three. Yeah. Okay. But he would preach because the same style church that we went to was the same style church that he preached at down in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it was a significant change going from there to Loudonville, right? To where you're like, what? It's 45 minutes. It's over. What? Like,
is that where your parents go now?
No. They go to Bethel Full Gospel in Rotterdam.
Okay.
Love it there. Some great people there. But it was, and even now going from Loudonville to there.
Stop hitting the table.
Sorry. Just, that's my like partial Italian self coming out. I live in Rotterdam, so it does happen. You just kind of grasp it.
I don't care. Stop it.
Okay, fine.
It's my podcast.
But
if you don't stop, no one will ever see this episode.
It's still such a change to where the style church that I'm sure we all go to now. So I think growing up there, seeing that once our families left, no one talked to us. It was really odd, for your cousin's funeral for me, where people from that church came to be supportive. Mm-hmm. And I have no ill will towards any of them. It is what it is. I haven't been there in 20 years, 15 years.
Yeah.
But every one of them called me Nathan. Every single one of them. And I was telling my mom afterwards, I called her. I'm like, now that they all did it, I'm only remembering them calling me by my full name. Which is just weird because everyone calls me Nate. Yeah. Exactly that. The former pastor just said, hey, Nathan Clementine, how's everything going? But it was just so odd to me. Like the whole experience was just so odd. Like seeing people I hadn't seen in forever. And then having them call, I'm like, this is just weird. This is just so odd. But I think that for a while I was resentful of their way of thinking, just to be blunt. I know I'm definitely not the only one that felt that way, considering half the kids we went to church with didn't end up that great. Mm-hmm. When it comes to depression, when it comes to horrible life events that some of them have gone through. I mean, I only know of a handful just because I've only seen a handful through social media, but, and that's sad at the end of the day.
It is sad.
Because there is so much more that Christ has to offer besides that one congregation. And if you can't think, if you just think that once you leave, oh, they just don't care anymore. You're just hurting yourself at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're doing a disservice to everything that you're supposed to believe in as the body of Christ, as the church.
Correct.
Like, it's not that you're being neutral about anything. You're actively being a disservice to people that need help or are in those formidable years as a young person.
Yeah, watching some of the events unfold, kind of like what you were just talking about, Lex, is you think back on it and you're like, that's just not correct at all. That's just not right at all. Where you just shun people.
Yeah.
Right? And now, granted, I've met some great people through the churches that I went to as a kid, people that I still keep in touch with. Our parents, I think, met that way, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. So there's some great things that came out of it. Mm-hmm. But in regards to how I want to serve Christ now compared to how that style maybe still even does it, to my knowledge. Yeah. I have no interest in doing that way. I like I like the way that...
Or raising your kids that way.
Right. I just... And my dad as a pastor had a ton of pressure. You think you're you think it's all cool that you're the pastor's kid as a kid. You were. It is not cool. Yeah. I'm telling you right now.
People actually think that?
I thought it was awesome. Like as a kid, I'm like, oh, my dad's a pastor. This is sweet. Right.
That was a genuine question because I know like people always make jokes about being pastors' kids and whatnot.
PK.
Like, yeah. Like I never like experienced that.
Yeah. But. So like as a kid and as a young kid, you think it's like so cool, right? Like your dad.
I'm getting to heaven quicker.
You do. You think it's just like. It's just awesome. Your dad is the pastor in a church, and you're proud of that.
Has bagels and donuts in his office. What do you have before service? Oh my gosh.
But I didn't realize the pressure that was on him as a kid. Mm-hmm. And you are absolutely held to a different standard as the pastor's kid. Yeah. There are things that I saw plenty of other kids do in that small little church mm-hmm. in Rocky Mount. If I was caught doing the same thing, he was getting talked to.
Yeah.
There wasn't any ifs, ands, or buts.
You're held to a higher standard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even there was one point that they were even upset with him for working on the house as much as he did. Because to my knowledge, it was Christ isn't coming first. The house is coming first. And you're just like looking at my father who.
Jesus was a carpenter.
Looking at my father who has put his absolute all into his faith, like that made me resentful. Yeah. That like once my parents were able to explain things to me when I was older and explain why we had to leave and things of that nature, whether it be Rocky Mount or whether it be up here in upstate, that made me resentful mm-hmm. for a long time. Even though we met great people who we still keep in touch with, it made me resentful of the entire idea. Of it. And now I don't, but
that one statement of you're working on your house too much and it's printed before God, like you're doing the,
and please keep in mind, this does not reflect all those styles of churches. If you know me, who I'm talking about. That does not there. Like I said, there are some amazing people who truly love Christ and want to do the right thing. But I think that the overall method that church has is just not the way that we all need, I guess, is the best way to
put it. Now I have two things.
Politely and correctly.
One is that say, you know, working on the house, you're putting up the house before God is like going against the fundamental one thing that like we're not supposed to be casting judgment on people or calling, you know, other people's faith or priorities into question. Like that's literally not like we don't judge people. And second, to touch on not you saying not all churches are the same, that's absolutely true. Churches are made up of people, and people are imperfect at their definitely. Nature. So,
like, even the church we go to now are not perfect.
Yeah. Right.
And, same. And you know, the difference is the pastors will tell you that.
Yeah. Exactly. Flat and that's out. What I love about it. There's no like sugar coating it. Like, hey, you know, like, yeah, we've made mistakes. The amount of times that, you know, our pastor gets up there and shares things about his history while he was an active Christian where he slipped and did things he wasn't screwed supposed up. To.
Yeah.
And that's encouraging. Like people want to hear that. People want to know that whether you're suffering with mental things like depression, anxiety, or you're struggling with spiritual things that, you know, you're not supposed to be doing that. Like people have gone through that too. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, that's really what you should be looking for in your friend group, what you should be looking for in your churches is people to support you through the hard times, not look down on you because of the hard times you're going mm-hmm. through.
Well, and I think that also comes into play with people's understanding of God. Like, it seems like the church that you guys came from kind of had this, like, no, you have to be happy and perfect, which isn't what the Bible says at all. Like, Bible's very, and this is probably one of the reasons why you like The Chosen. The Bible is very real. Like, it deals with a lot of real, like, read the Psalms.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
He talks about depression and anger and all the sorts of, like, that's one of the reasons why I love the Psalms. But it's there. Like, one person I heard, I think it might have been in a Bill Johnson sermon. He was like, if you're struggling with something, just start reading the Psalms until you find it. It's like, it's in there.
Yeah.
It, no matter what you're dealing with, it's in there, mm-hmm. and you can find it. Just read until you find it. And then you're like, oh, here it is. Here's where he talks about whatever I'm going through, you know. And the Bible has a way of addressing it. Doesn't mean bury it, ignore it,
right,
and put on the happy face. And that's not how Christ meets us. And I think that with that same stigma, like you were talking about, people didn't get help, or maybe they were mistreated or manipulated when they did bring it up. But I think people in some churches misconstrue getting help, like going to therapy or something, as not relying on God.
Right.
Which to me, people, so another analogy I heard is it's like God giving you a shovel. And you're waiting for him to dig the hole.
Right.
Like, he wants you to be a part of the work and do your side as well, which means, you know, reaching out, going and getting therapy, relying on friend groups, or being the friend to help a friend, you know, like you were talking about your friends working on cars and stuff with you, instead of just sitting there and go, well, Lord, just fix it.
You know?
Yeah. And like Sarah said on the last podcast, And I never thought about it this way, so it was a good perspective. There's therapists for a reason, right? It's like having cancer and not getting chemotherapy.
Yeah.
Right? God has provided us all these resources that were even 50 years ago were not even close to how they are now.
Yep.
Probably even 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So take advantage of what is out there. Mm-hmm. Prayer is absolutely important. Being encouraged by other Christians is absolutely important. Accountability, the whole nine. And keeping Christ first is the most important. However, there are resources there that have been provided to us that people couldn't take advantage of a very short time ago. You got to take advantage of what's out there and really embrace it and realize it's okay to do it. I had this, like, I'll figure it out. I got it.
Yeah.
I got it. And part of it was just pride. Like, and just like, and there's a million different components, I'm sure. How we were raised, how, like, pride, being a guy, the whole nine, right? But you can act as prideful as you want and you can do whatever you want. But at the end of the day, it's not just going to go away on its own. You need to seek some help.
Right.
I cannot stress how important it is to do that for anyone that could be listening.
That's good. That was, I don't even know what adjectives to use, but I'm going to go with insightful and encouraging. I think those are the two that stood out to me. Thank you, Nathaniel Clementine, for sharing your life experiences and what people to perceive to be something that's very difficult to talk about. It's not easy to find people who want to talk about it. So thank you. And thank you all for listening. Thank you, Zach, for co-hosting with me and doing dancing throughout the episode. You guys can't see that.
Thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
Anytime. Cool. And like I said, if you want to come on and talk about Star Wars or something.
Much lighter.
Less lighter. That's perfect. But until next time, guys, thank you so much for listening. Check out our website, which is live. You could read more about us. Direct links to our social media and some wonderful My Life, Your Life Together merch that you can purchase.
If you like the podcast, feel free to support us.
Yes. It goes a long way. But yeah, I always like seeing when people order it, when people send me pictures of them wearing it. It's super encouraging.
I'm wearing it right now.
He is wearing it right now. So yeah, check out the website. Send us some messages. Let us know if, like I said, Nate reached out and said this would be cool to talk about. So,
exactly. Like and subscribe.
I listen.
Like and subscribe.
I haven't gotten there yet. You have to like and subscribe. Like and subscribe.
Click the notification bell.
AP as possible.
What are we waiting for?
Okay. This is enough. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.